Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here Monday, August the 2nd, 2021, 15 coming up on 16 minutes past the hour. And you are all set this morning for a two-hour trip into history here in Marion, and a very fascinating tale of something that happened really not all that long ago when you think of it in the grand scheme of things here in the Marion area and also in other areas of central Ohio. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about this here in the beginning, how I became aware of this, and then we're going to turn it over to our guests and have a two-hour conversation about really business and food and what can happen, the pitfalls, ups, downs, and really an interesting tale of the food business, really, is what it is. So stay tuned. I do want to remind you, though, really quick, that Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam Lepp comes on right after this program this morning, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on this station, and Voice of a People with Linda Sims will be on today, 4:10 until 5 p.m. Now, here is the story, and by the way, there's a very happy ending at the end of this story that I want to tell you about. Now, there's I'm going to say about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, I was at the home of Jeannie Evers, the wife of Charlie Evers. Now, I know Jeannie's out there listening, so good morning, Jeannie. She handed me a bunch of books that were Charlie's books and said, you can take these up to the station, do what you want with them. There was a book in there that stuck out to me. It's called Three Pies Hot, The Rise and Fall of the Great Race Pizza Shop. Now, when I saw the cover, I thought, well, this is, you know, California, New York, Michigan. Don't know where this book came from. It was Charlie's. So I open up the front cover of the book, and there is an autograph in this book from the author. Again, I thought, well, maybe it came from another state, maybe Michigan. And then there is a note stapled right in the cover, 1993. Let me see if there's an exact date on this. Yeah, December 7th, 1993, a note was sent to Charlie Evers talking about the release of this book and how it had Marion ties from Glass Onion Publications at that time, way back in 1993. So now I'm thinking, well, this really must have something to do with Marion. So I read the book that weekend and found it to be absolutely fascinating. And the second part of why this was absolutely fascinating, we're talking about the 70s and 80s here, and I had never heard of this shop. It was called the Great Race Pizza Shop. Never had heard of it. I asked Jeannie about it. She had never heard of it. I asked some other people. They had never heard of it. So there's a whole book written about a place that was here in Marion that really has an interesting tale that at this point, here in 2021, nobody seems to remember. So I was able to track down the author of this book, Robert Welsh, and this is the happy part of the story, is that Robert is with us this morning, along with Eric Warren, who was an early employee of this shop. And Robert on Friday donated copies. He had some copies of this book left. He donated them to the Historical Society, so you will be able to get a copy of this book after today if you would like one at the Historical Society. And I also believe he brought some for us here that we're going to be able to have at the station, so if you would like to get a copy of this book. Now, after that is all said, we're going to get right into this story. And again, the title, Three Pies Hot, The Rise and Fall of the Great Race Pizza Shop. Robert Welsh is the author. We welcome this morning to these microphones Robert and Eric Warren. Robert, thank you for making the trip this morning.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you for sending the news helicopter to pick us up.
We love the news helicopter. Always flying around Marion, buzzing around, looking for news.
There you go.
Now, Eric, where do you live?
I came in on the air ambulance. I live in Columbus.
You're in Columbus.
Yes.
Now, Robert,
tell us...
You can call me Bob.
Bob. Bob, tell us how this book came to be way back in the early 90s.
Well, you know, I had worked at the Great Race Pizza Shop from start to almost to the bitter end, and I needed some way to relieve all the... all the memories and afflictions that I had from the work experience, and so the book was just a way of working out and setting down everything that had happened. And then I thought, you know, it was a great psychological release to get all that out of my system.
Before we get into the book, back in 90, did it come out in 93?
I believe so. That was it. Yes.
When it came out in 93, what was the reception in 93?
Lukewarm. It was, you know, picked up by Barnes & Noble and Borders, and I know it was available at the bookstore in the Southland Mall there for a while. But it certainly didn't catch fire or anything.
Do you have any thinking to why that maybe was? Because it's a local story. It's a great story. Was it just maybe the times?
It might have been, you know, and the truth of the matter was there wasn't a lot of promotion behind it and everything, and so if you're not out there really pushing things, I mean, they just fly under the radar.
Well, the great thing about this book is when I was reading it, it could have happened today. I mean, this book has no date to it, except we know the dates that it happened, but there is nothing in this story that could not happen in 2021.
Well, and it probably is happening. I mean, you know, all businesses come and go, you know, and, you know, they might be hot for a couple of years and then fade away. And so it's a very common story, I think.
Now, Eric, kind of give us your background. How did you come to this business?
I was forced to. basically, it was a choice of continuing to pour concrete with my father, or work at Kroger's, and Kroger's was just not my cup of tea, and I decided to try something different from what my entire past had been, and happened into Great Race Pizza Shop. They were looking for drivers at the time, and at the time I was driving a 1948 Oldsmobile, and they hired me, so I was the slowest driver they had.
Now, which branch did you work at?
The one here on Delaware Avenue.
Right here in Marion.
Yes.
Okay. Now, how many did all the branches open up at once? How did this happen?
No, it was all a gradual process. I mean, we opened the first store on Delaware Avenue, and it was probably open for maybe 7 or 8 months before we opened the second store in Findlay. And, you know, they slowly sprouted up, you know, Findlay, you know, and we opened a second store in the Fair Park area. Marion. You know,
there were two here in Marion.
There were two here in Marion for a short time. You know, but that second store on Fair Park didn't last very long. And, you know, they opened stores, you know, in Columbus, you know, the 161 area, Mount Vernon, Delaware. And I don't think there was ever more than 5-6 stores open at a time, because, you know, that was part of the drama, is that, you know, it was difficult, you know, to get things up and running.
Well, it's interesting, and just for people who are interested, the first store, period, was 619 Delaware Avenue. Now, I was talking to Bob this morning. It was right over here by where Pizza Brothers is now.
Correct. There's a building there that has three shops in it there, a beauty salon on one side, and we were in the middle, the Great Race Pizza Shop, and then the Associates Finance Company was on the other side. And after the Great Race, you know, shut down, it looks like your Pizza Brothers took over the Associates, and then there's a music store in there now where the pizza shop used to be.
Now in Fair Park, where was the shop at?
Oh, on Greenwood Avenue.
As soon as you went into Fair Park, on the right-hand side, there's like a sign up with the map of Fair Park and all that. It was in that little entrance.
Oh, right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, on Richmond Avenue.
Oh, so it was actually in Fair Park.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, by 50 yards.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Now, what year did the first shop open?
In May of 78.
78. So that's why I say this is not all that long ago, a little over 40 years ago. This is, people listening, I'm sure, would have been alive in this time frame. Now, does it say when the Fair Park branch opened?
Yeah, that was August of 78, and December of 78, and they lasted until April of 79, so they weren't... they didn't last very long as the Great Race Shop.
Now, how long was the Delaware Avenue location open?
Until March of 83.
March of 83. So it had a decent run.
About 5 years, yeah.
About 5 years.
Actually, it was the length of the lease for the building.
Well, tell us how it all started. How did this idea come about, Great Race Pizza Shop?
Well, it started with my brother Mike, and one of his... associates at Domino's, Charlie, I believe the last name out. But the two of them got together and said, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, working for somebody else. We can do this business ourselves. And they decided to start a company. And they looked for a place where they could start without a lot of national competition. And they chose Marion, you know, for its central location, its good population, and wide diversity of community and everything, and so they and it was at that time there was no national competition other than I think Godfather's Pizza, which didn't deliver, and so they chose Marion as a starting point, and they signed a lease. I think it was like in April of 78, and we began converting that into a pizza shop, you know.
Now, so this was a little bit of an offshoot of Domino's.
It was. I mean, it was truly inspired by Domino's. The two principal owners of the company were both from Domino's and trained by Domino's. And the only real difference between them and Domino's was that, you know, they included subs, you know, as part of the menu. And Domino's at that point was strictly pizza, nothing but pizza. And then and they branched out since then as well. You have to branch out.
Now, one thing that stood out to me was the 30-minute delivery. Now, at that time, was Domino's offering the 30-minute delivery?
Yes, so that was their main thing, and I think until sometime in the 80s or 90s, there was a major lawsuit, I think came out of Colorado or somewhere, where there was some tragic accident. I'm not quite sure all the details, and then they had to kind of back off from that. But it was always a race to get the pizza to the door, and so, you know, we competed, you know, 29 and a half minutes to show that we are faster, you know. But it was a race to get the pizza from the oven to the door in 30 minutes or less.
Now, how long does it take to get a pizza to a door? How long does it take to cook a pizza first? Let's start there.
Well, I mean, and you're talking ovens at 600 degrees, but, you know, we would start making them literally while the people were still on the phone ordering it. I'd like a large pepperoni, you know, and you know, while they're giving us their address, we're out there slapping the pizza out, you know, and putting it in the oven. And sometimes it would be in the oven before the people even were off the phone. You know, and so... It might take 7 to 8 minutes to cook, depending on on what the pizza was and everything. And then we would have drivers, you know, running it from the door. Then they'd have about 20 minutes to get it from the oven to the door at that point.
Now, Eric, this is fascinating. You were a driver.
Yes, sir.
So you knew you had to get this pizza to somebody's door in 29 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
So how did this work? Because did you give the pizzas away? Was that the gimmick that you gave the pizzas away, or what happened if you didn't get it there in 30 minutes?
Typically what we would do is maybe give them a free quart of cola or something like that, because I mean you don't want to give a pizza away, and so we would give them a discount or something like that. I know some of the other chains would give it to you free, but, you know, our food costs are so high that we didn't want to do that. But, you know, so we would give, like, a free quart of cola or something like that. And it was rare, unless it was really late, that they would get it for free.
So, Eric, typically, how long would you have, once the pizza's boxed up and ready to go, to get it to somebody's house?
Well, actually, I think I only drove the 48 Oldsmobile for about 3 days, and Bob lent me his Toyota Corolla. Which that was back when Toyota really built a car very well. And I got to the point where I knew pretty much every pothole on every street, and I really shouldn't admit this, but if an ambulance was going down the street or a fire truck, I'd just hop in behind it until I got to the intersection I needed and then peel off. But I was literally paid to speed, and I would do 55 miles an hour, sometimes 60 on city streets.
Now, in 1978, Marion, as we do today, had a lot of one-way streets.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if you had to go downtown or had to go through downtown to get somewhere, how could you possibly get somewhere in 30 minutes with all those traffic lights and all those one-way streets?
Well, you pushed the rules and the envelope as much as you could, and I forget, Bob, how many pizzas will I take with me on average? Three or four?
Could be three or four. Deliveries grouped together in maybe the same street, same neighborhood, you know, so that you might hit, you know, one street, the next street over, and something like that. Sometimes you might be lucky to have two deliveries on the same street. So we would group things together, you know, and they would go from the first call into the last, you know, so they would still be in chronological order and everything.
Now, what was the delivery area? Do you remember? Did you go out in the county?
Only once or twice. I went to New Bloomington, Augusta, and that one, yeah, I just took one.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, I think we even told them that the 30-minute guarantee may not quite be in effect out there.
We did limit our delivery area so that people weren't out there in the middle of nowhere, you know.
Was this a successful gimmick? Did people say, boy, let's order there?
It was. It was very successful. I mean, I think especially in Marion, like I said, there had been no competition, no national competition as far as delivery, you know, prior to 78. And so we did get a lot of feedback from people, you know, appreciating the quick delivery and everything and the free delivery. You know, and so it really, I think, set the standard, you know, because I think I mentioned at one point, you know, we started with 16 pizza companies in competition in Marion. And by, you know, 1983, it was down to like, you know, 10 or 11. You know, I mean, and so it was good, fierce competition, and I think that gimmick of fast delivery, you know, helped eliminate some of the people.
Now, Bob, you got to have a good product in any business, certainly the food business. Do you remember the pizza recipe?
Yes, I do. And actually, Eric, he was in charge of making it for so long, but we had a dough recipe, which we, as it's in the books, I can't deny it, but which we kind of skimmed off of Domino's because we went to their commissary out, I believe it was in Zanesville at the time, and kind of copied their recipe.
So you had Domino's crust?
Basically.
More or less.
We tweaked it a little bit, but like I said, the owners who started it, they hadn't made it from scratch before, and so they didn't really have a recipe, you know, and so they kind of, you know, glommed it off of Domino's there, like I said, tweaked it slightly as far as the temperatures and the yeast and so forth, but it was basically a Domino's crust.
Now, as everybody knows, pizza really does come down to the sauce. Mm-hmm. Was there a special sauce recipe?
We bought a sauce product from the suppliers, but then we tweaked it with oregano, and I don't know what else we put in it, and then let it meld for at least 24 hours. So there was a specialty there as far as the company.
Now I'm going to ask you both this because obviously at that time you would have been partial, but years have passed. How good a pizza was it?
I enjoyed it. I liked it because I mean, we used fresh ingredients, and there were so many places that would use, you know, like the glue-based cheese, but we used real provolone, real mozzarella. We used real meats as far as pepperoni. The sausage, I think, was from Spicer down there in the southern part of Marion. It was locally purchased from
came from Riffle Creek Meats.
That was it, yeah.
And also the Capicola for the subs from Riffle Creek Meats, run by Mr. McNamara.
Yeah, so we use a lot of local product as well. And
it's very important that the sauce sit for 24 hours so that the dried herbs can soak up the moisture, expand, and get the flavor through. It's just like chili tastes better the next day.
Mm. It needs to meld.
So did you like the pizza, Eric?
I loved it, and quite frankly, I was quite proud of it. Would take it, you know, to my parents' house when my sister was here visiting from Australia, and I said, you know, just opening the lid, it was almost like a work of art, because the pepper rings, yellow pepper rings, were always arranged nicely on the pizza, not just thrown on. The fresh mushrooms versus canned, you know, were arranged nicely. There was a lot of detail and thought and care that went into the pizzas.
Well, and we made it a rule, I mean, like with the pepperoni, you don't overlap the pepperoni. You space it all out so that you get pepperoni in every bite, you know, and whatever you're ordering, you get some of that in every bite. So it wasn't, you know, glopped in the middle or anything like that or anything. It was all laid out so that whatever you got in every bite.
Now, Eric, driving pizza around, pizza delivery man, 1978 in the 83 era, what were tips like in those days?
Non-existent. I was really making, I think I got two tips during my entire career.
might have been your appearance, I don't know.
It could have been. It could have been the odor, too. But, no, it was basically a commission base that I was making money on, which was one of the incentives to drive fast. Not reckless, just fast. And, you know, there was a point where I knew the streets so well, I knew how to avoid the potholes just spontaneously. And there was, like, the little curve coming up towards Great Race, the little triangular island up here. It was at 41 miles an hour. That was the absolute maximum I could do with his Toyota Corolla, and that's when the two wheels on the driver's side would start to come off the ground. And I found that out by gradually increasing my speed on each run to, like I said, I was maximizing my speed to make the commission.
Now, were you ever pulled over?
Well, theoretically, yes.
Theoretically.
It was over on Silver Street, Fairground Street area, and I think I had a couple deliveries at that time, and I was really hauling it, and I passed this policeman, and I saw him pull out, and he didn't get his lights on, but I knew he was following me, but I had to make a turn. I'm delivering pizzas, you know, we'll worry about the ticket later. I thought he would give me the ticket in front of the place where I delivered, so, you know, I made didn't think that, you know, he would lose sight of me, and I made a couple of turns, ran up on the porch, delivered the pizza, got back in the car, and I was waiting for a couple of minutes, and he never showed up, so I just left.
But maybe he was a fan.
He could have been.
He could have been a fan of the pizza, understood what you were doing.
You know, speaking of change, I mean, tips were somewhat non-existent, but, and we found this out later, but we had one driver, you know, the price of pizza was like $5.95, and rather than digging for a nickel, he'd always say, tip or change? Like, what do you want for that nickel?
And the commission base at that time was really so good that the tip was almost, more monetarily effective for me to go and make up more speed and get more pizzas delivered than to wait for somebody to say, well, here's another 50 cents, you know, because I was making, I think, what, over $300 a week or something like that in commission?
In that period.
In that period of time, which was really good. It took me several years after I left Great Race to make that kind of money again.
And that was over the top of their regular minimum wage salary.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this is 1978.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What was minimum wage back then? $2 and something?
I think it was like either $2.05 or $2.10 or something like that. Yeah. It was.
That's good money.
It might even be in the book there, but yeah. Minimum wage was minimum at that time.
You're up all night and you sleep during the day, basically. We used to joke about it when we went to Sambo's. You know, we had to get home and get to bed before the birds came out. When you heard the birds chirping, it was hard to get to sleep. It really was. But my eyes became so accustomed to the dark that I could read a house address without the porch light on.
Mm. Well, now, this begs two questions. Number one, what was the equation for this commission?
I honestly forget.
That sounds like a good equation.
It was 6% of your deliveries minus the coupons. And so if you delivered $100 worth of product and $5 of coupon, you get 6% of $95.
Now, what if you didn't get it there in 30 minutes? Was the commission blown?
No.
No, okay, so you still got the commission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nice.
I mean, we might, you know, notify, you know, said, well, this pizza is free because it's 55 minutes or something like that, you know, and they would not get a commission on a free pizza because that's not part of your total then for the night. But you still got 6% on your base of your gross deliveries.
Now, Eric, I want you to think about your strangest delivery. It's going to people's doors here, but I think we do have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I remember the Great Race Pizza Shop. They had a good pizza.
They had a good pizza. Now, what did you like best about their pizza?
Well, I can't remember exactly what I liked best about it, but it was a good pizza. A buddy of mine, he used to deliver for them, and I'd drive along with him when he delivered for them, but they was busy.
Oh, a buddy of yours used to deliver. Do you remember his name?
Don Prater.
Don Prater?
Yes, I know Don Prater.
Don Prater. So remember Don Prater. So it was a good pizza, and you remember it, and were you unhappy when it went out of business?
No, we was in pizza business ourselves.
Oh, you got in the pizza business.
Yeah, when that happened.
So there was inspiration there.
Yeah, but we was in Prospect.
Oh, okay.
Prospect, Ohio, then we went to Richwood, Ohio.
Well, I'm glad. Now, did you like the idea of the 29 and a half minutes or less delivery?
No, we never offered that.
Yeah. Did you think that was a good idea on their behalf?
No, because, you know, that lawsuit come out and Domino's, you know, dropped it. But, it would be hard to, you know, do that in 30 minutes or less. And,
yeah, it would.
And what? Like the guy said, you know, we used to deliver, too. And we had a place here in Marion also. And, that 30 minutes for free, that encourages too much speed. It's definitely not a good
thing. It was a tough standard.
Yeah, I imagine it was. Well, hey, thank you for calling in. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
People remember it. They're getting some calls now. Now, when it comes to the strangest delivery, Eric, what do you remember?
Well, there were two, actually. One, the gentleman had false teeth, and he called in to complain because we got the pizza there too quick, and it was so hot that it burned him through his dentures.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And
that is trouble.
That is trouble. And the other one was, what was it, Lilac, Lavender Avenue?
Lilac Lane.
Lilac Lane.
We're not going to mention the numeral.
Yeah, but I went up to the lady and delivered a pizza, and like I said, my whole goal was to get there, get it delivered, get the cash, get gone. And for some reason, she didn't like me and said I stomped on her porch and, you know, I was a horrible person and all that. And I said, Bob, I don't even remember. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And why would I stomp on somebody's porch? I got the money. I'm out of there. And he drove by the next day and saw it was a concrete porch. Yeah, so, yeah.
She was just a cranky lady, it sounds
like.
Yeah,
and you would have that. You would have that, but you went on.
Well, and it's in the book, but she wrote a letter to management complaining about, you know, the delivery. And she'd been running a scam, you know, for months on end. Every pizza was bad or something like that. And we did send her a free one just to make her happy. And by the end, we got to said, you know, we can't keep sending out, you know, free pizzas every week to this person who is continually complaining, although she must like it since she called every week. And so she wrote a letter to management, you know, and complained about, you know, delivery, which was recently handled by Eric. And so we said, we'll do one more and, you know, make or break if she doesn't like, you know, this one, and then we're cutting her off. And so we made extra effort to make sure everything was absolutely perfect and delivered. And I believe I delivered that one, you know, just to make sure that there was no controversy as to anything. And she still complained, and so we ended up cutting her off there. But she had quite a reputation within our circles there, and so you get those people who, you know, I mean, they may love the product, you know, but they'll try to find any way to get a free pizza, you know, and that's probably true with, you know, any industry, you know, any food industry is, you know, what can I do to get something for free? You know.
What kind of money in 1978 was backing this business up?
Personal savings. We opened the first store for probably about $20,000 total, which is a low buy-in for any store. And I had about 10% of that. Then, you know, my brother put in some, and then his partner. And there was a small, you know, credit union loan as well. But the initial startup cost was about $20,000.
How were the owners, the majority owners, at that point in the beginning?
Well, that was my brother and his partner, Charlie. And they were heavily involved right from the very beginning. Because, I mean, you couldn't, you know, invest basically your life savings at that point, even though it was only $20,000. You couldn't invest it without actually being in there and running it. And so they were very active in the running of the shops and everything, which is a lot of the drama is that, you know, Mike had a long history of business. He'd worked in, you know, fast food, you know, Burger King, BBF, and Royal Castle and a couple others, you know, before getting to Domino's, whereas Shirley had only worked, you know, like a year or so with Domino's. And he didn't really have a lot of business sense. You know, he knew all the maxims, you know, customer always comes first and, you know, and so forth. But he didn't really know how to implement it.
When you opened in 78, business must have been good because the branch out did happen.
It did. It was very good. And it was an excellent location. And Marion was very supportive of the product. And I remember, you know, from the discussions and everything, we made a profit in the first month, you know, okay. And it continually made a profit, I'm thinking, until the very end. And so it was never a question of not making ends meet. I mean, we were booming right from the very beginning, you know, and we were hiring right from the very beginning. And you know, that's, you know, kind of when Eric came in, because we were constantly hiring new people, you know, because we were growing and we were growing fast. And Eric quit quickly when actually, you know, from the time, you know, from being a driver, you know, to actually working in the commissary, making the product, and was at one time, you know, manager of the commissary as well, you know. So, I mean, we were, you know, making our own ingredients and turning it out and constantly growing in that field.
Eric, what was the atmosphere like when you got out of the delivery car?
It was a different, you know, I was thinking about that. The gentleman called in about, you know, the speeding and it's not a good idea, and that it was a different era. There wasn't nearly the traffic on the streets that you have now. And I just happened to think about that when you said, you know, going from one end of town to the other. You could do it back then because there might be three or four cars on the road at that period of time, and that was it. You know, that was a period of time when you could go from Marion to Columbus on 23 and see maybe six headlights at 10 o'clock at night. Now it's bumper to bumper. But the atmosphere when you're getting out and delivering, you know, people were happy to see you. They're getting food delivered to their door that's, you know, really delicious, hot, and, you know, you don't even have to get up off, you barely have to get up off the couch to get it, you know. Delivery was kind of a new thing back then. I think Danny's Pizza was doing delivery. Other than that, I'm not sure who all did, but, and our pizzas were very, very loaded with food. You know, if you got the EBA, everything but anchovies pizza, it would be very, very heavy. I think, what did they weigh? About 4 pounds or something like that? I mean, it was a lot of food. It
big
was a
pizza.
Lot of food. Yeah.
And what did a pizza cost?
I do remember that a 16-inch, which was the larger at that time, today it's only 14-inch, but a 16-inch pepperoni was $5.95.
Mm.
You know, and I don't know what that's probably closer to $15 today.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't bring any of the old menus or anything like that. But I do know it was that was a starting point. I think the one like Eric mentioned, everything but anchovies, what we always called them. Those would probably run close to $11, and people would say, oh, "That's a lot of money," you know. And well, you know, like I said, it was a 4-pound pizza loaded with the toppings and everything. I mean, the crust itself was usually, you know, was 16 ounces. Yeah. That's a pound right there.
Now, as we said in the beginning, the separation from Domino's, one of the big separations were the subs.
Correct.
Now, what was so good about these subs? How were they made?
Well, I think the number one thing was, you know, we used real meats. I mean, we had tested out some places in Marion before we, you know, settled on our total sub recipe, but some of them had bologna or, you know,
cheap
ham or something like that. But we went with, you know, quality capicola, you know, and quality ham,
salami,
yeah,
good,
you know,
good ingredients,
you know, good sliced provolone, you know, fresh lettuce and tomato and everything.
And we were slicing that fresh daily in the commissary, which was a really great team atmosphere at that period of time. You know, everybody there enjoyed working there because we were not very heavy-handed, especially when I came on board. You know, the girls, we had like three girls that were working there making the you know, slicing, dicing, etc. And
they were all waitresses that we hired from Sambo's.
Picked them right up here in Marion. Well, yeah,
they would literally smell us when we walked in. And said, "Oh, you guys smell so good." And it was like, "Ah, we're tired of smelling pizza all day. You know, we're here for a peach cobbler." But yeah, the girls were great. And early on, you know, one of them, Terry Blanche, came to me and said, you know, two or three of the girls that worked there wanted to go see a concert that night, and they wanted to know if they could leave early, or it was the next night or whatever. And I said, you know, I really don't care when you come in or when you go, as long as I can get my pepperoni slice, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, really? So they got all of their work done in 6 hours, and then I clocked them out at 8, you know, because I had the work done. And they thought that was fabulous. And we went pretty much with that kind of a schedule from then on. And, you know, I've always believed if you work hard, you should not be penalized by getting more work. So, yeah, that was a great atmosphere at the time.
Now, one thing that's interesting here, this business went along until 1983, but very early on, there was a second store here in Marion, the Fair Park location, that didn't even last a year, was it?
Correct.
So, okay, tell us the story of the Fair Park store. Why so quick to branch out, and then what in the world happened over there in Fair Park?
Well, Charlie's dream was to be international quickly and to grow quickly and to push Domino's off the map. And so he was always looking for investors. And, you know, we even had one driver. He said, "Oh, we got a 20-year-old driver who's owning a house." And he tried to sell him on investing, which he didn't do. But they somehow, they ended up talking with a banker or some other insurance man or something like that and convinced them to invest, you know, in the pizza business. And they sold him a franchise, you know, said it'll be their second store here in Marion and it'll be booming. And these people were not restaurant people. And so they were talked into investing into it. And so they opened the store and things quickly went sour for them. You know, they didn't want, I don't know all the details that happened in those conversations, but they didn't like, you know, the way Charlie, you know, micromanaged everything. They didn't like, you know, paying the royalty fees and so forth. And so they quickly quit paying their bills, which caused trouble financially. And so, they ended up terminating the franchise agreement and everything. And so that one, you know, went, like I said, closed within a year, and they were also at the time trying to open a Delaware store under their own name, and so that I guess really the first big setback in Charlie's international dreams, that he couldn't get a franchisee up and running, you know, last longer than a year.
What did it taste the same over there?
It was absolutely the same.
Same thing.
Because and they were successful, you know, in delivering the product, and we basically split the city down the middle, I think it was maybe Center Street or something, I forget what the dividing line was, and then so, you know, the store in Delaware Avenue took the southern half of the city, and the store in Fair Park took the northern half, and it helped reach some of the northern areas that we weren't able to reach from Delaware Avenue, and so they were successful from the beginning, but, you know, the franchise owners just didn't get into paying everybody. And it was a much smaller store, and so it was harder to work in. It was probably a third of the size of the Delaware Avenue store, and so it was just, you know, very cramped, and they would constantly be doing deliveries of food product there on a daily basis because there wasn't room to store anything there either.
Was there an apprehension with the success of the Delaware Avenue store to cut the city in half at that point?
Well, and I was working in Findlay during that time period. Because they had opened a store there, and so I wasn't directly involved with all those discussions. But it seemed like a good idea. And like I said, you know, we weren't able to reach some of the northern areas of Marion, you know, from the Delaware store because it was just too far to go in 30 minutes or less. You know, and so the Fair Park store seemed like a good idea, you know, to reach some of the northern areas.
Did anybody ever have an accident trying to get these pizzas there?
I don't recall that. I mean, I know there's be automotive breakdowns here and there. You know, yeah. One guy lost his muffler. One guy actually got locked into the Marion Cemetery because he took a wrong turn. I don't know what he was doing, but it's always disappointing to see a driver coming back from delivery walking instead of driving.
That is a little different. A little different. Now, tell us about the expansion into Findlay and Delaware and these areas.
And like right from the start, you know, Charlie was always looking for investors, and he sold his father-in-law on the idea of investing in the Findlay store. And, you know, which was, I don't know, 35 miles north of here, roughly, straight up 23 for the most part. But they ended up buying a used pizza shop in Findlay. Findlay was always secondhand. I mean, that I don't mean that so much derogatory, but everything in Findlay was secondhand. They ended up buying a store there that had went out of business. Well, it was shut down by the health department because the owner of the store was a big hunting aficionado, and he had lost one of his prized dogs, I don't know what from, but he froze the dog in his freezer.
Oh.
And the back of the pizza shop there where he was working. And one day the health department came in and they found this frozen dead dog back there with all the other food products. And they said, no, this is not the proper way. And they closed him down. And that story apparently was very popular and Findlay, very widely known, I guess not popular. And but Charlie and Mike, being from out of town, didn't know the story. I thought they were buying a great bargain. But, you know, it was tainted right from the very beginning. And everybody who came in for the first year, they always say, hey, you got Scotty's dead dog in the back there still? No, Scotty's long gone, but the story remains.
Apparently. How about Delaware?
Delaware, it was funny because they kept trying to open a store in Delaware. And actually, they bought one very early on in, like, 78. But then they lost the license or whatever to open that store, and so they actually moved all that equipment to Findlay. And then they tried again when the Intergrace people, the franchises who owned the Fairpark store, said, well, we'll get them to open a store in Delaware. And they got a location. And before they even opened, they lost the right to franchise. And so that was the second Delaware store to not open. And around the 83 or so, they finally got somebody else. Charlie convinced another driver who had some money, I think from an insurance claim or something like that, to open the store. And he ran it for a little while, and it didn't last very long again because, I guess it opened in March of 81 and then closed in June of 83, you know, and then moved. And you know, it was always Charlie's goal to get something in Delaware, but it took him forever to work out the details, and there was always something coming up that would close it, you know. And I think the Delaware store actually, you know, was in one location for 2 years, and it moved to another location for 2 years, and then he finally lost, you know, control of it to the driver who said, you know, I don't know all the details. I read through the lawsuit between the two of them, and you know, so the driver ended up taking that store into his own name and everything and running it himself.
Now, there was a big expansion into Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell us how that went.
That was always Charlie's goal because he figured Columbus would be the battleground. We could go head-to-head with Domino's and the other national chains. And so they planned on a store that was going to be, you know, their Tiffany of the company. And they found a location on the northern side on 161. And they put everything into it, you know. They put, you know, brass, you know, poles there to hold up the counter, which it couldn't be seen, but they were brass, and so everybody knew it was good. And they put in real, you know, Tiffany style lights over the counter and everything. And it was the premier crown jewel of the company. And you know, I know Charlie fought long and hard, like with the health department. He said, you know, that he wanted small restrooms there, you know, so that, you know, But they said, well, you need to have everything has to be handicapped access. And so they had very large restrooms, probably larger than the studio here that we're sitting in. And so Charlie would always end in use the restrooms as a warehouse storage area. And he'd have all sorts of food product and
Scotty's dog.
Yeah. No, but you know, and so the what restrooms actually became part of the warehouse, part of the area there. So, but it was a good location, and it lasted for a number of years, even after Great Race folded, it took over a new identity.
Do want to let people know, we're coming up on a break here, but we are going to come back with Bob Welsh, who is the author of Three Pies Hot, the rise and fall of the Great Race Pizza Shop. Now, we've learned about the rise, so the next hour we're going to learn about the fall, and the fall is quite interesting. Also, Eric Warren is here, who was an employee of this business for most of its run here in the Marion area. Now, I want to highlight something here. On the back cover of the book, there's a section in bold. Now, here's what it says. As the story unfolds, the drama shifts from control of the industry to control of the company itself. Practical jokers, backstabbers, and thieves join with the inept businessmen to achieve many successes. On their roller coaster ride in the business, they would encounter asbestos, dead dogs, the energy crisis, unions, robberies, and enough lawsuits to keep any lawyer well fed. Well, we're going to learn about that in next hour here on WWGH Radio. And you've heard Bob here refer to Charlie. We're going to find what happened to Charlie. Where did Charlie end up? What happened to him? The guy who won had big grandeur ideas, and after 5 years, they were gone. So what happened to Charlie? And also, there are some memos in this book, and we're not going to read the memos on the air word for word all the way through, because you can get a copy of this book as of today again. But we're going to talk about these memos and what was going on back with Bob Welsh and Eric Warren and the story of pizza in Marion, Great Race Pizza Shop, chronicled in Three Pies Hot in 15 minutes. Take a break, get some breakfast, come back with us.
Supporters are very angry that I even brought up the racism question, but, you know, I didn't get to finish. Again, it was my, I really wanted to give him the opportunity to wrestle critics. But I think I'm surprised that his people haven't prepared him more for questions like that when these issues are at the forefront of the election.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Check us out on